everybody. Thanks for listening, tuning in to Beyond Paranormal with Ben and Cheryl Ledoux. I'm Cheryl.
And I'm Ben.
We're here tonight.
Listening to ourselves repeat as we forgot to mute our speaker.
I love kids. They like to play with my computer and turn things off and on and off and on. So those are things we deal with. Tonight is May 22nd. We have a great guest for you. All the way from southern Tennessee, we have Mark Elliott Fultz of Ghost Paranormal. They are the Ghost Hunters of Southern Tennessee. Welcome, Mark. How are you?
Oh, fine. How are you?
Pretty good. A little bit stressed out. We've been helping our best friends who are getting married on Saturday, so we've been doing a lot of running around in preparations for that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that'll wear you out.
Yes.
Especially when it's the best man and the maid of honor.
We have double
between
duty.
Between the two of us, we got double duty.
Double duty. Well, yeah, it's kind of like a death. I mean, everyone gets a lot of stress, a lot of fun.
Well, the fun is what we're hoping for. So far, so good. Of course, they're going to kill me when they hit the best man.
Yes, the speech we've been working on, it's more of a roast than a toast, something we've been collaborating together, so that should be fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I just helped someone do a Halloween wedding last year, and it about made my head explode, but it was a lot of fun.
That actually sounds like a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah.
I want a Halloween wedding.
Halloween's definitely our favorite holiday.
Can we get divorced and have another wedding?
Oh, yeah.
No, we just get remarried.
We just get remarried.
We can renew. I don't know if I'd want the stress of replanning another wedding.
No. What a cost.
The only major obstacle we've had is dealing with this rain. It keeps saying it's going to rain, not rain. So we've ended up having to get a tent. Their wedding is outside, and as a precaution, we had to get the tent, put 100 chairs underneath.
My goodness.
Well, that's enough about our fun. Let's talk about you now.
Right, and before we get started, if anyone has any questions, they want to call in, you can reach us at 818-431-8214 here on DTM Wicked Radio. Again, we're talking with Mark Elliott Fultz. Am I saying your last name right?
Yes, you are saying it just right. A lot of people call it, I've been called everything from flukes to what. So,
if that's the worst you've ever been called, you're doing better because you should see the names I get.
No, well believe me, it's not the worst I've ever been called. But I'll live with it.
That works.
Now, you have been... you have quite the history because you have 30-plus years experience as a psychic.
Wow.
Yeah, from now, when I really started working at it when I was 18, and I'm 52 now. So.
Now, you said you had told me earlier that your first psychic or medium experience was when you were about 6 years old. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, I was, of course, when I was 6 years old, it was 1968, so you've got to imagine, back then. But my mother brought home a black cat that a friend had given her, and she brought it, as she came in the door, I didn't know she was bringing it home. And she brought it in the door, and it jumped out of her arms and ran under the couch. And so I dove under the couch, because it was one of those ugly 60 couches with big wooden legs, it stood up real high. And I was under the couch trying to call the cat, and I heard a voice tell me, its name is Sally Bell. And so I started calling it by its name, and they all about dropped dead, because they were like, how did you know its name? And because it wasn't a typical cat name, so. But that was the first time that they really started seeing that how weird I was,
Oh, it's not weird.
It's different to them.
I had a very similar experience recently. We had a litter of kittens, and the runt was actually not thriving very well. She was very tiny. And I was just sitting with her and taking care of her one night, and it was like that. I had someone, like, literally talking to me going, like, hi, my name's Elsie. You can call me Elsie.
Yeah.
Okay. And then
yeah.
as soon as I started calling her by her name, she's, you know, perfect. And now she's, like, rambunctious as ever.
Oh, good.
I never thought,
well,
like, So how did things progress from there, from after that incident with the cat?
Yes.
How did things progress from there?
How did things progress from that? When I was raised in a Southern Baptist family, so exhibiting psychic abilities or anything like that was a no-no, so I had to be very quiet about it. But my grandparents lived in a house that I did not know was haunted. But I would, you could see this man that would come to the basement window and look out the window at me, you know, anytime I would go around there. So, and he was quite dead looking. And so, you know, I just very quietly kept that one to myself. And then about 10 years later, we found out, you know, they told me about it being haunted and all the experiences, and then I experienced the haunting itself inside the house. But when I was young, I just didn't know exactly what it was. I just knew it was odd.
Right.
And then I would, hear spirit. Children up to a certain point, you know, are pretty open. So by the age of 11, I kind of learned how to turn it down so it wouldn't just drive me bananas.
Are you still a Southern Baptist?
Oh, no. that fell off the wagon a long time ago. I was Wiccan for probably 25, 30 years. And then
okay.
Now I'm more kind of universal, but I still have a lot of Wiccan ways.
So for being in the community, I mean, do you find that it's more accepted now, or is it still like the big no, you can't be like that from that point of view?
I have a lot of when I lived in a place called Highland Park, which is in the center of the Bible Belt, you know, the buckle of the Bible Belt. I used to have all these little Baptist women who would come and get their readings. Dead people, you know, they wanted to speak to. So it's always been kind of accepted under the table. And now, since all of the ghost exposure, now I have a lot of people who just, you know, who really just are excited over possibly seeing a ghost or talking about their experiences or having a seance or having me read them or read for them or to look at their haunted house. And I mean, almost everyone has a ghost story or a ghost experience to tell. So, you know, it's become a lot more acceptable since it's been on TV so much, you know. But of course, you're always going to get people who think, you know, who are wicked or something.
Right. Well, it's still a little taboo, but it's not as...
Oh, no, But see, it's not as bad as what it was, but, you know, when I was a kid, we had Dark Shadows on TV. And a while back, I started rewatching it, you know, 40 years down from when I first saw it. And, you know, we were exposed to seances, you know, The Walking Dead, ghosts, you know, and everything, and really didn't realize how much, you know, seances and Ouija boards and everything that we got exposed to in the 60s because it was part of the culture. And then it kind of fell away for a while. And this is one of the, you know, the cycles where it's come back, you know, where everyone's interested in ghosts and you're not thought to be crazy because you believe in ghosts or you're curious, you know. But I grew up in a culture where it was a lot of it. in society, you know, divinations and all of that. So, and we're kind of doing the same thing now. So if people are interested in vampires, witches, and ghosts, you know, so it's all kind of come back to the top.
Yeah, see, when I grew up, I mean, I was up in 77.
Yeah.
And even that, I was raised Catholic, I mean, Northeast, mainly Catholic area. It was kind of like the same idea. It wasn't something that you really talked about. I mean, I had experiences as a child as well, but it's not something that we went around broadcasting or anything like that. It was just kept to yourself because it's just the way it wasn't, like you said, it wasn't really an accepted thing to talk about things like that or bring them out in public. It was kind of like, oh, don't do that. That's wrong. You don't want to say that.
Oh, yeah, and too, being a Catholic, you know, that really, they have a big thing about that. So,
yep.
You know, everything's a devil or a angel, you know, so it's and, you know, a lot of things just get put into the category of bad.
Right.
You know, in other belief systems aren't bad, they're just stuff, you know.
I'm not going to get into a religious on it, but the thing I don't ever understood was a saint could come and prophesize about the future, but if you foretell the future, you're the devil. That's where I get confused with it, but I don't like to get into religion too much onto it because, I mean, I don't want to offend anybody on any means.
No problem.
Everybody, I respect everybody's belief on it. It's just that certain things do confuse me. So I've gone to all types of churches. I've gone to Catholic, Baptist. I've gone to some Wiccan. I've gone through many different,
different religions.
Just different religions to see the different viewpoints. I would go to Jewish, but I don't speak Hebrew, so it doesn't really work for me. But I've never been to one, so I'm not sure if they actually speak Hebrew when they're giving their lectures. But I don't speak it, so it would be kind of hard for me to go to that. So I have not yet gone to something like that. But, I mean, I like going to see the different views. And, you know, and to be honest with you, in every situation, I've always felt the same way. You always feel a presence around you while you're there. And so I would not be able to say that I don't believe in a god or a goddess if you're Wiccan. There isn't a form out there or there's nothing out there beyond that point because there is something out there to me, and I just don't believe that it is one specific view. I believe all these views have a very big commonality if you go through all religions. That's why...
They're all connected.
They're all connected in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah. The way I used to say it was one tree, many roots. You know, it all kind of... There's truth in all of it.
I'm going to have to remember that one because... I might use that.
Because
I might quote you.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's not. I didn't create it, but it is.
I know, but
it's
I might.
You know, I mean,
a very good analogy.
Oh, yeah.
That's a very good one.
Yeah, because I think it covers everything because you know, even though when you talk to a psychic, you know, a psychic can take you to certain points, and but you know, there's a lot of stuff that we still can't, you know, for sure tell you. You know, just because, you know, we're still alive. You know, I mean, I've had near-death experiences before, and which put me, you know, which helped my abilities, but it sucked otherwise. But you know, I think whatever the death experience is, it's a certain process, and it may not be, you know, it's a little bit of everything. You know, it's about what you accept and what you're looking for, and you know, you go through a process of some sort. I think every religion has something in it that's got their finger on the pulse. It's just that then they, you know, sometimes the business of religion gets in the way of spirituality.
Definitely.
Some people. Go ahead.
No, I was touching back a little bit when you said that you've had near-death
sure.
experiences. Many people
yeah.
have had different views on what happens at that moment. What happened to you? Like, was there a light? You know, what did you see in your near-death experience?
Well, when I had my death experience, I was 30 years old, and I had been attacked in a random act of violence. It was just, you know, these people that just wanted to kill somebody.
Right.
And so I got attacked and beaten in front of 40 people. Nobody called the police or anything like that. They just beat me until they ran out of air. And I was 6'2" and 118 pounds because I have Marfan. So I went to the hospital, was in that, and I started dying. And when this experience started happening, I realized I wasn't in pain anymore. I felt really good because I had 4 fractured ribs, collapsed lung, all of my intestines and everything were knocked loose from the lining. I was really messed up. And all of a sudden, everything started feeling good. And a friend of mine had brought balloons and tied them at the foot of my bed. And in the reflection of the balloons, you could see someone sitting by my bedside. And my machine started going off and all this, and they weren't noticing the person sitting by me. And I could see a night scene, you know, like a hill with light coming, with trees and light coming from the trees, and people moving through the light, and they were coming towards me, and when they would call my name, I could feel myself vibrating and feel myself pulling, like if pulling towards them. And then, you know, everything just, it was like seeing sheets of glass in front of me with things being projected on it. And you just start, when you're starting to die, you're becoming more of a vibration because you're pulling out of your body. And you become very sensitive to all of that. And you just start downloading stuff like the internet. I mean, you just download everything that you're experiencing, and it was a beautiful experience. And it wasn't beautiful when I came back into my body, but it was beautiful while it was happening. But it happened about twice. So, but it actually helped my abilities afterwards. You know, it was what I needed to kick it up, I guess. You know, to doing what I'm doing now.
That's so horrible that you went through that. So amazing to hear about.
Well, you know, in the long run, it was a horrible, horrible thing, but it was also probably the best thing that ever happened to me because it made me become myself. I mean, I really had to stand up for myself and become who I was and think, and you know, stand up for what I was thinking. And it made me a lot stronger. But it wasn't even fun.
Many people could walk. That's something that would shake you up pretty good. You have to be pretty strong just to get through something like that.
And they kept expecting me to die. I kept expecting to die. I mean, they quit feeding me. People came and did their last views, you know, and I just wouldn't die, you know. It is what it is. I was meant to come and do something else. So.
Yep. For your purpose, absolutely.
Or you're just very stubborn, like me.
I come from very stubborn people, and my father used to tell me, he would call me stubborn, and I thought, well, where did I get it from? You know?
Always your mother.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was both of them. They were both bullheaded. So, you know, I got it, on one side I got a lot of Apache, and then the other side I got a lot of, we found out just a while back that I have Jewish roots. I didn't know that, but my grandfather was Jewish, and they hid it, because of where they live. But I thought, well, that's interesting, you know, because the Jewish people have a lot of mysticism and in the Kabbalah, and of course the Apache does too. So I think it kind of helps and combines, you know, genetics also helps besides being hit in the head, you know.
Do you think that people of a certain culture or, you know, international background, whether it be, you know, Indian background or French people or Irish people, do you think that they are more gifted than others?
I believe some people are more accepting. I mean, I think it's in India that if you have a past life memory as a child, because most children, if they're going to remember their past lives, they do it very early. And when they see people exhibiting that, they will take them and show them around and let them find out where they come from. And people have gone up and picked out their families. And when I was three, I was telling my mother, you know, because I remembered where I was before I came here. And I remember a white room, a white ball of light talking to me, and I was a white ball of light. And I was trying to tell my mother that, and she was like, shh, 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 you know, don't say that. So, you know, but in other cultures, they would have taken that as, you know, you're talking about your past life, let's see what that is, and accept it, you know, because a lot of, you know, but each culture is different. And someone else's beliefs are someone else's taboos. And if it's bad for business, you know. A lot of times churches don't like it. So they don't want you going somewhere else.
I think a lot has to do with timing, though. I mean, it's a lot more socially acceptable now. It would make it a lot easier for someone if you were coming out from even 10, 20 years later.
Oh, yeah. In 20 years.
Yeah, exactly. It would have been so much more accepted for what you do, and... But then again, you wouldn't be the person you are today.
No. And it's...
Well, I mean, every obstacle has...
So did your parents realize that you had these gifts more and more?
Okay, repeat the question. I couldn't hear you.
Growing up as a teenager, you know, when your gifts and stuff were coming out more and more as you realized them, were your parents aware of that, and were they acceptable?
Oh, yeah. They knew I was different than the other children. And the family I came from, I was too different, I think. And so they tried to beat it out of me. And at school, from first grade until 10th grade, I barely went a day without being hit, kicked, spit on. And not because I was doing anything. It was just that I just was different. And people sensed that. They had that sense of smell, like horses can smell fear. And I was different. And so I got hit, spit on, everything. And at home... if they found out I'd gotten beaten at school, then I got beat at home. So, you know, so when I was a teenager and I realized that my abilities were coming to the surface more and more, I had to shut it off because I was raised as a Southern Baptist and I thought, you know, I can't be doing this. This can't be doing. And, but when I got, to be about 18, then I just accepted it, and then, you know, it was fine, you know. But until then, people would zone in on something different, and around here, that's not what they wanted. They didn't want something different. You had to fit in.
Now, at the age of 18, you really got into metaphysics. What areas of metaphysics were you drawn to the most?
I really wanted to do healing, energy work. I didn't do sound thing for healing and closure until much later. But I just knew that I wanted to get into some form of helping people through psychic ability or physical, you know, energy work. And I met some people who grabbed onto me, and I got a lot of experiences, you know, through that. But it was, you know, it was, I had a period, I mean, you, there is no just one way to do it, you know, so I just went through experiences, and if something worked, and if it didn't, it didn't. So, but when I got, yeah, so, but I did get some guidance, but then the guidance was kind of bizarre, too, so. Just because people are metaphysical, if you're metaphysical, it doesn't mean they're all a tribe either, you know? So,
right.
You need some really strange metaphysical people.
Well, it's not like it comes with, you know, there's no set of rules how it works.
No. You have to find your own set of rules, you know, and stick by them.
Right.
Oh, yeah, well, different people meditate differently. They grasp onto energy, release energy differently, read energy differently.
Yes. And people, too, with around here, I found out a lot of people who wanted to do healing and stuff like that, they learned how to pull the energy out of people, the bad energy out of people, but they didn't know how to ground it and get it out of their system. So you could see people who were, I know a lot of people who were great healers, but they were sick as dogs, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to learn, you know, not to, you have to learn how to work with the earth and work with the energy system that's around you to help you, you know, assist you in doing healings and things like that, and also for doing psychic work. So, it's
now,
all real
delicate. What is your method of grounding? I know a couple different methods.
I do a meditation where I basically do almost I do a thing on the beach in my mind, in your mind's eye, and I'll do things like, you know, turn on my light. You know, take some of the light in my hand and draw it around in the sand and circle around me and do a grounding that way. Or I do meditations where you do the roots kind of thing into the ground, and then you have the window at the top of your head, you open up and let the light in. But you can find all sorts of different meditations to do it, but it's always best for people to learn how to ground, so that they just don't throw themselves, their own system out of whack. Because a lot of people
right.
will do this stuff, and then they just are shooting out energy, or they don't understand, you know, where they understand they can pull it up, but they don't know what they're doing with it, have a concept, and sometimes it'll make you get off kilter.
Definitely, no, grounding is definitely very, very important, as well as protection. And what methods of protection do you use when you're doing energy work, healing, or, you know, going into a house that has activity?
Well, now, the group I work with, Richard Rulin, does paranormal group, you know, I will take a salt bath before I go anywhere. I do meditation. I have a spiritualist call. I basically talk to my spirits, you know, that are around me, and do remote viewing of the place I'm going to do. If I feel like there's more protection needed before I go, I ingest a little bit of salt. I will tell the members of the group, you know, take extra precautions. You know, do some smudging. Do the salt bath. Take a little salt. You know, and just if nothing else, to get your mind set correctly so that your protective system, whatever you're telling your protective system, is what it's going to do. So if you're telling your protective system you're getting prepared, then your protective system will respond to that, your aura, you know. So it will, if I feel like there's going to be an extra danger of infection or something like that, or it's just icky and they need to, do extra at work, and I'll tell them to do that, and then that's what I do.
Uh-huh.
And then when
now,
I,
how
and then
you
then
get
we,
involved?
If we leave.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
How did I get involved with Richard?
Yeah.
Well, I was actually working with another group, which it was about to peter out. And they invited me to come to a ghost hunt, and I really almost didn't go. But I went, and it turned out to be the one where Richard and his group was doing the Temperance Hall in Harriman, Tennessee. And we just all we clicked. And all the things that the groups I was working with didn't record anything. They didn't keep track of anything. They weren't really investigating, even though they said they were investigating. And then Richard and his group were. They were recording. They were, they were open to trying to be more serious with it. And so we just clicked, and I've been with them ever since.
Yes, he spoke really highly of you and said you definitely have to talk to Mark. He's a great guy, you know.
Well, they're very sweet. They're very good people.
Yes, we've got us out of a jam a couple times when we missed our callers, had some problems, and they couldn't get in. He was more than gracious enough to call, help us out.
Okay.
Now, do you work with stones at all?
At stones, a friend of mine does, but I have the most I really do with stones is I have a pendulum that I use. I have some onyx jewelry that I use that's real mystical for me. They were made by a mystical person, actually from Massachusetts. And so I use my onyxes and I use my pendulum and I use, different pieces of antique jewelry that I have. And but I'm not real versed in all the stones and what they do and all that. So I leave that to the people who know what they're talking about with the stones. I just let the ones that talk to me, that's what I use.
Now, when you walk into somewhere, how do spirits approach you? How do they appear to you? Are they physical or do you feel them, sense them?
The way that I do before I go, I do a lot of remote viewing, which has really increased my abilities as I've gotten older. And it will show me, I'll look at the building that I'm not there yet. I'll draw out the building before I go there and talk to them, talk to Richard and all them about what I'm looking for. And then I know when we get there, if we can connect into, if I'm making connection. And then I just listen. I do a call to the spirits using I have my system set up to where it's, your aura is like a CAT scan. So I use my CAT scan to, look at the area, listen very carefully, and then I start listening for people and it's like the internet. You see something, a symbol, and you'll click on it. Basically, like the internet, you click on it, and it opens up information. So I'll wait until I see or hear something, and then I just go with it. And or if I see imagery, I'll tell them what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing. And we're usually, we've been very lucky to have a lot of success with it.
Right. Now, are you able to have, full-on conversations with them, or do you just hear what they say and relay those messages?
Sometimes, it's all very different. Sometimes I can hear people talking like we're talking. Sometimes it's very, there's, symbolism and stuff like that. Then once you get connected into that energy, then sometimes you just hear the information, in your head.
Right.
And then sometimes it's very visual. Like a time someone came to me and wanted a reading. They were looking for something about their uncle. So I focused on it, and with my eyes closed, I could see a man's arm laying on the ground. Mm-hmm. And I said, why am I seeing a man's cut-off arm laying on the ground? I said, well, we found his torso. We just haven't found the arms or the head. And so, you know, that's how that kind of stuff works. So we talked to the FBI, and then they said they knew where to go look. So I never heard anything else from it, but they knew where I was talking about.
Now,
so
have you helped out?
That's kind of how that works.
Have you helped out with many missing person cases?
I've helped people with the murder cases. Of course, here in Chattanooga, the police don't want to deal with psychics. So, but I've had some good experience helping with at least, I would say, pretty severely with two cases that were very interesting. And murder cases are, I think, is where I'm going to be going further into as I get older, because I think I could help in finding bodies and things like that a lot easier than it would have been in my youth. Because I think, you know, there are a lot of people that need to be found. Or, you know, but the police here don't like to use psychics. So there's no, they won't work with you or won't listen to you.
Huh. Even if you can validate the evidence?
We're in the buckle of the Bible Belt. They don't consider this evidence.
They
don't consider this evidence. No. They don't consider it evidence. I have worked with some policemen on the side, but then they can't use the information.
Right.
And if you gave them information that led them to the murder and the murderer, you go into court and, you know, they say, well, how did you get this information? They think it's you, you know.
Right.
So that maybe you were in on the murder or something, you know. So you have to be very careful. And I don't know how it is in Massachusetts, but, of course, in Massachusetts, y'all have lots of witches and lots of psychics who do that work. And
yeah.
I would expect that it's a little bit more open. But here it's still, they just kind of are a little scared of it and also a little, you know, joke at it, you know.
I'm not sure how it is. I've actually never asked the question of anybody from Massachusetts to know how open or not it really is.
Yeah, I would figure that it would be there because, I mean, you have, you know, I mean, Massachusetts, you know, has just, I know quite a few people who live in Massachusetts who are very psychic, very good for police work, you know,
but
of course.
Also it's also Massachusetts. It's 50% one way and 50% strongly the other way. So
that's true. That's
it's hard to know. I'm not really sure how the support goes. I actually never asked that question.
No. I know that we're a state of many, many religions. I mean, I could pretty much name off a person of, like, just about every type of religion in the state. A lot of people are very much more accepting now, though, of psychic medium abilities if you can validate yourself, because people now are very skeptic because it seems like there's just so many people crawling out of the woodwork saying I am gifted and they can't validate.
I mean, I know one person. I only know one person that works with the police that I'm aware of, and that's up in New Hampshire. I don't know of anybody else. Well, you may have. You've done a lot more of this of interviewing people than I have.
I know a few people, but it's,
I don't think it's widely accepted.
Have y'all noticed? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, I don't think it's widely accepted anywhere yet as far as evidential.
Well,
it's such a, it's kind of new even. You know, it's just like a new drug. It's really just getting out there.
Yeah, and the problem right now, because of TV shows and movies, it's, the focus has gone from just, you know, ghosts and psychic things. It's gone back to demons.
Right.
Yeah.
And so now everyone's got a demon. Everyone's got a demon biting them and scratching them. And it kind of puts us back a little bit, you know, because if you're wanting to work serious, you know, not all, there, you know, I believe there is demonic work out there. I do believe there are things that want to drive you, your car, you know, want to drive you, but it's very rare. But now, you know, since it's in popular consciousness, you know, I'm seeing a lot more people who are going, there's a demon in my house, there's a demon here that's trying to kill us, kind of thing. And then you have to, you know, you have to go through the process of calming them down and getting them to rethink the situation, you know.
I think a lot of it comes down to the fact of it's just like a child, if you think of it from this point of view, that if you don't listen to when they're trying to convey something to you, they get frustrated.
Yeah.
And then they ask out. Because you're not listening.
I think they're that's really what they're trying to get. And that's very smart, because that's really what they're doing. If they want your attention and they need your help, they will get your attention.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Please. Oh, go ahead. I was waiting for you.
Okay. Now, your opinion, I know, because there's many different levels of spirits, entities, different energies. Everybody has their own standards. You know, you read a different book every day, and they'll tell you there's different levels of patience. How would you classify different levels of energy as spirits, ghosts, above that, and possibly, you know, of course, you know, you range into the more negative energies?
From negative energy. Well, and with Richard's group, we've investigated several, you know, that were kind of scary energies. And then a lot of energies that you go and see, you know, I mean, it's like tree rings. You know, every year is like, you know, makes a new layer of energy, you know, of old energy. And all of this old energy is caught in, you know, if you put a thumbprint on something, you know, it's still there for a while. So your energy is like that. And sometimes you go into a place and you have to look at it and see if it's recorded energy, if it's just something that's being kicked at because someone's there, or if it's got a consciousness. And if it has a consciousness, is it what's the intent? Is it just making noise? Is it bored? Is it wanting to get you out of its space, or is it wanting to just, it's just frustrated because you can't hear it or understand it, and it's seeing you all the time? So, you know, but I feel, you know, my natural process, I can tell pretty well, you know, if it's something with a consciousness, if it's someone that's in need of help, or if it's something that needs to be gone, you know.
Uh-huh.
And if it's something that needs to be gone, a lot of things that we do that other people don't do is, you know, because I watch shows where people will say, oh, you've got a demon, or you've got this spirit, and it wants to hurt you, and you should move, you know. And what I'll do is I'll say, look, you know, this is you're in this energy. You have a relationship with this energy. What you've got to do is set boundaries, reset your energy, and basically change the energy law. And you push that energy out, change the energy that it's used to, make it uncomfortable and push it out, and eventually it'll go somewhere else. Because you really can't destroy energy. You know, it just goes, does something else. So I teach people how to take control of their situations, take control of their energy that they're putting out, and to try and get control of what they're doing, what they're thinking, and to get a control so they're not afraid, you know, kind of thing. But there's very few energies that are going to be real harmful. They can just be very disturbing. You know, I mean, I've been to places where I've had do scared out of me. So.
Now, what about a spirit? Okay, like I'll give an example. Someone we know is very clairaudient and can hear.
Sure.
Can hear spirits talking, and he's been places where he's had things approach him and go, you know, get out, get out. I'm going to hurt you. Get out.
Yeah.
I mean, how would you approach that from your point of view?
I would first I would make that person go through meditation, reset their aura so that they're, because since it is a CAT scan, you know, reset your aura so there isn't anything else in your energy. And when you come into contact with this stuff, you'll hear it, but you don't necessarily have to accept it, you know, and it won't be getting in your energy. And if it's disturbing to you, I do a meditation where I tell people, it's like, imagine a big radio knob, you know, a knob on a radio, and old, well, since I'm old, you know, radios had big knobs, you just turn them up and down, and you
right.
just imagine that in your head that you've got a big knob of you, and you turn that down so that you don't hear all this extra stuff. Now, if something is confrontational, you know, you have to decide, you know, is it in your space? Or are you in its space? Or, you know, why are you hearing this? You know, you have to sit down and look at each case separately. But he probably needs to really fix the aura, his aura, and make sure before he goes anywhere. And then when he starts coming in contact with stuff, if he don't want to deal with it, he can just turn it down and say, you know, talk to the hand, you know. You know, or stand in line, you know.
Right.
Because a lot of times they'll talk to you. If you don't turn it down, a lot of people don't sleep because they'll hear stuff all night long, you know.
Right.
So they're just too open. So they have to learn to turn it down and make it where it's healthy.
Now, can you force something like that? You know, if this is something that's following him from home to home, and he can just, you know, turn it down, can he also force that out of his living space? You know, as somebody that's not experienced stuff.
And, you know, and two, I would have to look at, you know, why is it following him? Is it something that he connected with in his youth? Is it something that he connected with? A lot of times, you know, too, when you're young or you know, if you do too much drinking, too, alcohol, drugs, anything like that, or abuse or traumas will sometimes lower people's protective system. And
mm-hmm.
sometimes when you have a lower protective system, there are other things that will just hook on like a tick. And
right.
So if it's something that's following him around, I would question it and see, what is your purpose? If it is not a guide that is part of his people, if it's not there, you know, because sometimes you get people that have died too early, and they will hang around you because they have an invested interest in you, or your life is kind of similar to them.
Mm-hmm.
And if they help you, then they feel like they live their life and they finish up, and then after a certain point, they go on. If that's not the point, if that's not the case, if this is just something that's hooked on to him at a certain time in his life and it's not being helpful, then he needs to get rid of it. He needs to change his system. He needs to purposely separate himself from the spirit or the energy. Because sometimes, you know, the personality is separate than the soul. So sometimes you get a spirit, a ghost haunting that's a soul, and sometimes you get a haunting that is the personality was so strong that when the soul left, just the personality has become a thought form, and it's still continuing doing whatever it was doing. So it's a consciousness of its own, but it's not the soul. So sometimes you have to get rid of stuff like that. And then some people have picked up spirits from going to the cemeteries, doing stuff, you know, with their system not correctly working, when they went to do it, when they go to do investigations and stuff like that. And so you have to be careful not to just get infected a little bit, you know.
All right, I'll certainly, you know, pass that on to him. I know it was
sure,
a question he had been asking me, and, you know, he really doesn't want to deal with all the paranormal investigators and everything like that. It's something he's like, he just kind of want to handle it on his own. And, you know, I've told him everything I can, but it's like, you know what, I have a guest coming on. I'm going to mention it to him and see what he has to say.
Yeah, well, I feel like, you know, now while we're focusing on it, I would tell him that the energy has a D to its name. It is male. And it is I think it's someone he's either known or he's associated with, or that for some reason is hanging on. I don't think they can do any damage or anything. They just are kind of hanger on. So he could probably dislodge that. Because if he doesn't, you know, it's just extra noise.
Right. Just like you said, turn it down on radio. And it's not old to think of a radio with knobs. Okay. I still remember radio,
you know,
with knobs, and I don't consider myself old.
Yeah.
I might even still have.
No, you're not that much older than us. I won't admit my age, but
I'm not old yet.
Well, I'm old in dog years. I tell them I'm the fat psychic, you know. We go to places, and one time I had to climb up some, there was a school we went to where they had cut the staircase down to this place on the third floor. So I climbed up on a ladder, on a desk, and then I had to climb up 4 feet up to a doorway that was just hanging in midair. And I got up there and I thought, you know, this is the fat psychic. You're going to have to get the ambulance here to get, or the fire department to get me down, you know. Just tell them the psychic is stuck up in the tree.
That's good. You didn't foresee that one coming, did you?
Oh, no. But, you know, as you get older and fatter, you know, it just makes me meaner.
Go.
Now, have you ever had any, like...
Say, I can just sit on it. Have I ever had any what?
Have you ever had any, like, terrifying experiences? Because I know, like, this is something normal for you since you were very young.
Stuck up in a tree.
Things like that are scary, but there was one place here that I've had a couple of very scary experiences, but in my youth, because I wasn't prepared for them, you know. And now I would be chasing them around with cameras. But there was one place that a satanic group here used to use, and they were in the 60s and 70s, they started killing their own people. And so that place was boarded up for 37 years, and they just finally tore it down. But it had some really scary stuff in it because they had left their circle going when the leader died, and it just, the watcher that was made to watch still watched, so nobody could use the house. And it was very scary looking. But now they tore it down, someone's building a house on top of it, so, you know, I think it's a big boo-boo.
Oh, good luck to them.
I'm like, I wouldn't live there, you know. You know, it was a pretty spot, but no. You know, I'd be too afraid because it's very parasitic. It will, you could go by the house and hear it buzzing when it was active. You know, it was just very strange. Very scary.
Now, have you ever performed any type of exorcisms or anything like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, one time up on Signal Mountain here, a friend came to me and, I've done several exorcisms, but she had this problem in her house, and it was starting to affect her husband, who was a doctor. And every night it was coming this thing would come in the hallway, and then it would be over his bed, and then he started having personality changes. And I went to their house, and you could hear it in the basement talking, you know, wanting you to come down in the basement. So we did an exorcism and got it out of there. But you know, it's a lot of times if you have exorcisms done religiously, like through Catholicism, sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. If the spirit doesn't kind of believe or conform to whatever it is you're telling it, sometimes you can't get rid of it just through the religion belief of it. But then you have to tackle it through energy. It's energy, so you change the energy so that it can't access that space anymore. I've seen some that people have gone in to do exorcisms and it pissed it off, you know. So, or made it mad, excuse me. But
okay.
She's not like it. But I have seen, you know, I've been very successful in some exorcisms because I just deal with them as energy. And at some level, you can affect them on some level if you can tackle them at that point. But sometimes if you tell them, get out, you know, sometimes they feel like you're on their turf. So
right.
Sometimes you can't get rid of them very easily.
Now, remote viewing, is that something that you can do without ever seeing a place?
Yeah. And that's, you know, I mean, pretty much that's what it is. What I'll do is I'll sit down and I'll draw. I tell Richard Mim never to tell me information beforehand. And then I will draw the picture out. I will draw energy out. I will draw any names or anything that I'm curious. And I will draw where the energy spots are in the building that we're going to. And usually it shocks them for some reason, and it drives them crazy when they can't tell me stuff. So,
right.
But I make them not tell me stuff before I go in because I don't want to be influenced or said that I was influenced by anything told to me beforehand. And that way, when I go in and make a connection, you know I'm really connected.
Away my question.
But remember, yeah.
You
yeah.
took away my question with that one.
Oh, with that one.
Okay. I was going to ask
Wait, what was your question?
I was going to ask you if you go into a place that's, do you always go into investigations cold, like, without having
blindly.
The information blindly?
I go in cold, and I will put my fingers in my ears if they start talking about something and go, la, 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 la. I drive them crazy.
I won't tell you about my house.
Okay.
From Twitter, listener wants to know, how do you sense the difference between a good spirit and a negative spirit, and how does it affect you when you do come in contact with the negative spirit?
Well, since I have my protective system, my filtering system, I work on it on a regular basis. So when I come into contact with something, I'm reading it, but it's not getting in my system. You know, I can look at it, scan it, tell you if it's like a virus. It's like a human type of virus protection, like you have on your Internet. And if it's something that's bad, it just, you know, I just know it to my core. If it's something that's okay, you know, or it's just something wandering around, then it's no big deal. But if it's something negative that you have to watch out for, you know, I've been pretty good at, you know, can tell it, you know, if it's bad and I just cut it off and don't allow it into my energy. And then if I have to get rid of it or separate it, then I work on that. But I can tell usually, you know, and two, a lot of people have experiences and don't realize, you know, it might be their guides, their people, like, you know, dead relatives and friends who are trying to help them, you know, that are around, and they just don't know what they're experiencing. So you have to sift through all of it, and I think you through experience, you know, just exposure over and over, you learn what's good and what's bad and what's scary and you know, what's a big no-no, you know.
Now, besides being a psychic medium and all-around awesome person, you have a lot of other things going on. You're also a musician.
Yes.
What kind of music?
I'm a musician.
What kind of music do you hear?
I actually, because of a past life regression, the first time I was put through a past life regression, I came out with two or three songs that came from the 1600s, 1700s.
Mm-hmm.
And it just opened up my musical ability, and I started writing songs. Actually, I was working on a song before, 30 minutes before I got on here, because I have some friends, we want to do some, you know, B-movies. We want to do some B-movies for YouTube. And
mm-hmm.
So I'm putting together all these antique songs that I've written, because a lot of them are a lot of them are old, and a lot of them, the ones that are, but I'm working on one that's a hip-hop song, about a grave robber. So, you know, I mean, I do music, I do art, I do costuming, I do glass engraving with some friends, I do, I'm about to start working on stained glass work when I get room. So, I mean, I'm doing a tarot set, you know. I've written a book, Chattanooga Chill, so, I mean, I'm writing the second one because I've turned up with 50 more stories about where I'm at.
That was
so, question.
You wrote Chattanooga Chills. Can you tell us a little bit about that first novel?
Sure. I worked on that for about 20 years before I was able to get it into a book. And I ended up with about 45 ghost stories of things that I've heard all my life or that I've investigated. And I did that book. And the first time I did it, I made all my mistakes on the first printing. So the second one, I got a editor to help me. And the second printing of it was great. It's in, you know, it's been able to go into stores and stuff like that. So I started looking at a second one. And was going, well, I have enough stories. You know, now I've turned out I have about 50, 60 more stories already to go into another book. So then the first one, you know, I mean, I illustrated the stories and did a lot of the stuff, you know, myself. I like to do illustrations and all that. So I'm a very hands-on, crafty person.
True stories.
True stories, yes.
Yeah, they're all true. Now, when do you expect that?
Well, there's a few of them. There's a few of them that are legends,
right?
Legends. So, and because of them being gone, the place has been gone, or that I, you know, I can't always speak for something that was gone 50 years before I got here. But the ones that I've experienced or have seen, I tried to not do any stories that I didn't have some experience with myself.
Right.
And so that way that it wasn't just, you know, there were a few campfire stories, and then there were the ones that I investigated, like at the Reed House. You know, there's a woman in this room 311, and it was the first time I got cussed out by a spirit. And I had never had that experience before. And she was very beautiful, but she was a jerk. And so, you know, I mean, I was able to put that into the story, you know. So, that kind of stuff.
Now, if people want to buy your book, the first Chattanooga Chills, where can they find that right now?
It is on Amazon.com. It is at, you can get it, you just put in Chattanooga Chills and they'll bring it up on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Locally, we have it in a Winderbinder and a play, Barnes & Noble. But you can get it online day and night. And
now
the next one.
When do you expect that one to be out?
Oh, I would love to be able to do it this year, but I have a feeling it's, you know, not going to happen before this Halloween. But I'm putting it together. I've got quite a few photographs and pictures, and every time I show people the pictures I've got, they just go, ooh. And so I think I've got plenty of pictures. I like to have lots of pictures and illustrations for the people who are visual. And it's on its way. It's on its way. It may take me one more year, but I will get that one out. And then the next project I'm hopefully going to have out is my tarot set.
Reading about that one, the tarot set.
Okay, I couldn't hear you. What is
the tarot set?
A tarot set called The Veiled Unknown. And
okay.
I'm putting in, and I started off with a death card, because death cards, a lot of people get scared of them, but really what they are is transformation. Sometimes you need the death of a situation to bring in new stuff. And
right.
I did a very popular piece of artwork for it, and that really started the tarot deck going. So, you know, I've only got like 40 more to do, so 40 more pictures. So it's going to be a busy cycle.
Whipped out in a few minutes, right?
Yeah.
No problem. But yeah, see, people are
no
doing
problem.
Yeah. The death card can be such a positive thing, because, I mean, if it was a very traumatic, if something was a very bad point in life, the death card would be a great card to have pull up to end that strung of luck.
Yes. You know, you sometimes to start something new, you have to let the old fall away. And so sometimes there needs to be a death of a situation. It doesn't mean a death of a person, just something has to go before you can bring in something new.
Right.
And
how long have you been...
You know, so I... Oh, go ahead.
How long have you actually been doing tarot, as far as the readings and...
Well, I started working on it when I was young, and I couldn't find a deck that I really liked. And then about 15 years ago, a friend of mine wanted a reading really bad, and I didn't have any cards with me. So she bought me a deck called the Roared Tarot deck, and I just all of a sudden started reading it. And it's all about finding the right thing. And it's a deck that really spoke to me, and I've used it. And if I pick up another set, I find I can't really read with them as well as I can that one. That one just worked immediately. So I've been doing them about 20 years since then.
Wow. That's kind of amazing in its own way. Right. I mean, it's pretty out for you, and it worked so well for you.
Oh, yeah. You know, but it and much more reading, you have to find the one that's meant for you, and vice versa.
Now, you're working on your own tarot set, correct?
Yeah, correct.
That's what he was just talking about.
Yeah. 40 more to go?
And I can't hear you. What now?
You have 40 more cards to go in your set? That you're making yourself?
I still couldn't hear.
The tarot set that you're making yourself?
Yes, the tarot set I'm making, yes. I'm hoping to have it finished by July.
Oh.
And then, but I'm probably going to be more finished with it by September. But then once I get it, I can have it, you know, put it online. I can get it printed and put it online. Because there are these programs you go on that you can do, that you download, and you can do your own tarot set design.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm doing. I'm doing the artwork and then putting them into the template. And then I'll send that to a company and see if I can't get them to reproduce them for me.
Oh, that would be wonderful. Well, I can't wait to see them.
Yeah. Oh, well, thank you. I can't wait to have them out there for people to see.
Now, you also have been doing a YouTube show with Richard Rulin and Carmel called Hunting the Unknown Truth.
Yeah. And we've had a lot of fun with that. We got in June, we're going to Vegas to film a segment for a show about the Hales Bar investigation that we did, where I do a procedure that other psychics apparently haven't hooked on to yet, where I use chanting and harmonics to raise the energy to speak to spirit, to our energy. And we did that at the Hales Bar, and it's like turning on a faucet, you know. It just made a lot of stuff happen. So it's been a lot of fun. They've enjoyed, we all enjoy getting together and doing things and trying to make shows.
Chanting actually kind of makes sense. I mean, a lot of early based civilizations did a lot of chanting for spirituality.
American Indians do it. A lot of pagan cultures do as well.
Go ahead.
It's more like you're getting back into the past, which makes sense because I think that's where they were spiritual to begin with.
And I think it may be going back to some of my Indian roots. But, and when I do the chanting, a lot of people think it's crazy. And I'm like, people were chanting millions of years before you ever came along. And that's how they were communing with spirit. And no one else is doing it. And I'm doing it, but it's old. But I also do automatic writing, which people act like that's new. That's something I've seen all my life. And the table tipping and stuff like that. You know, a lot of people haven't seen that stuff. So all of this old stuff is new to the new generation. But to me, it's not new. It's something that you do as a metaphysical person. You're used to chanting and raising energy. And it makes a profound effect. In the right place, it's amazing.
That makes sense. I mean, people depend on their eyes for what they see, so they're more looking for a tool to show them what they need to see.
Yeah, and it's a new frontier, you know, but it's old stuff.
Now, what kinds of things are you? Is it a specific phrase, a song? Is it just sound?
The one we did at Hales Bar, The spirits gave it to me while we were sitting at this place where there's a whirlpool. And we had two scientists with us. So one of the scientists had his phone turned off, and it sometimes thing has a lot of, it talks when it's turned on. So when the spirits told me the tone to use, which was a tune, it turned his phone on, and it started talking, and it scared him out of his pants. And then later on, when we were at a certain place in these tunnels, which I found out, you know, the best things happen usually when I'm the most tired, I'm ready to go home, you know, if it's been a long thing, you know, nothing's happening. So we went in these tunnels at like 2 in the morning, and I heard the spirit say, do the chant. So I did the chant, and we got stuff on camera. And then afterwards, I've drawn pictures and showing people what I can see and what I was seeing, because they can only see like a percentage of it with the cameras yet. And but I actually was given the tone for that through the spirits. But if you use I have different chants. Each chant is a different key. It basically opens up a different energy level or dimensional layer. So, it's different communications. It's like making a phone call. You have to put in the right area code.
Mm-hmm.
And make your call.
Now we have another question.
Sure.
Wondering if you take breaks from time to time just to recover from tough cases.
Yeah. There was a TB hospital here that after we had a great scary experience in it, but it was so sickening that it took me about 3 days of just laying in bed to get over it. It was just, my system was trying to protect itself so much that it just wore me out. So sometimes, and the best thing is, you have to know when to rest. You can't just do it 100% every day every day, or you'll make yourself sick. And because you're, it's your system and it's your energy. And eventually you need to, you always need to know when to ground and reset.
Mm-hmm.
And that just comes from age and, you know, knowing when your body is speaking to you. So, yeah. So then you just shut down and rest and then go right back at it.
I can relate to that. I just got done cutting up 4 or 5 huge trees. My body told me it was time to stop.
Yeah.
Stop. Okay.
And that's the way to do. You always need to listen to your body. It always tells you what you need, whether you look good or not.
Yeah, I know. Especially when you ignore it long enough, your body definitely tells you that too.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you get older. It starts speaking a lot. It speaks before you even start.
Now, what has been your most memorable case that you've ever worked on? Is there just one case that just always just sits in your mind?
The one that comes to mind is there was a woman that I knew that after I lost contact with her, I found out she had had a son who had been murdered and was had been missing for 4 years. And I always wanted to help her. You know, but I don't go up to people and say, you know, blah, 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 blah. If they come to me, if it's meant, it's going to come to me. So there was a metaphysical store here, and I was doing seancing for healing and closure, teaching people, you know, going through the seancing, let them find out a little bit what it was like to speak to their spirits. And this girl was there, and I connected with her about her brother who was dead, and I told her about the place where he was buried and about the buildings there and all that. And it turned out to be this other woman's daughter, and it was her son that had been missing. So she immediately went to the mother got me, and we went through it, and I went with them, and it was an incredible experience, but the end of it was very difficult because they had, when he was missing, they had made such a mess with the police that they couldn't even call the police to talk to them about this, you know, about the case, because they had made them so mad and done so many things trying to find him that they had ruined it. So we got to the end, you know, and I basically know where he's buried, and I took him to the place and had given names. We went right to the tombstone, right to the place, because he was buried by these druggies. They were burying people on top of other graves in this cemetery. And so, you know, they would bury money and drugs and people on top of other graves, because who was going to look for them? So they had him buried in the woods right next to it. So when I took him out, they gave me a shovel, and they said, well, if they catch us, we'll all go to jail. And I was like, okay, maybe not, you know. So, but it was an amazing experience. It just didn't have an amazing ending. So I had to learn, but I learned a lot from it, because I learned there's, you always have to take into consideration other elements and people, and there are a lot of people have stories in their head, even though it hasn't brought, for, you know, conclusion to a missing persons case. So you brought, what I hope to do is bring in new information. Well, if it conflicts with the story they have in their head, they don't necessarily want to go with it. And even though it hasn't brought closure. And so sometimes you get a lot of frustration during that. But I've had some very interesting murder case experiences. So I think if I were in a bigger city, it would be a different experience. But right here, it's still, you know, I'm still whistling in the dark.
But you're doing a lot of good things, especially with, you know, ghost paranormal and everything, and, you know, helping residences and people. You know, it's always, know, so good to be able to help people. And I mean, that's why I do it. I love the science of it and getting answers to questions and everything, but being able to help people just rest in their own homes is just very gratifying.
Yes, and there's a lot more, you know, since we've had so many tragedies, so many tsunamis and earthquakes and tornadoes, and, you know, there's always these just tons of people being dumped into the spiritual level. And so we have a lot more activity now. And people need more help because there's more stuff.
Oh, yeah, I can fully attest just in this, you know, past year and a half. My brother unexpectedly passed away a year and a half ago. And then 8 months to the day, his son, who was deaf, had a very tragic accident at school, and the doctors missed it, and within 2 weeks he died. I've had just so many medical near-death experiences in my family just in the past year. It's been very tragic. I feel like everyone around me is dropping like flies.
Like flies. Well, and two, as you go along, they do that. Because, I mean, you know, all of us at some point are going to be dead, you know. You know, and unfortunately it happens, you know, it happens in tons, you know. I mean, I've known so many people that when I was 18 and 21 died, you know, and they've been dead longer than they were ever alive, you know. So, and one day, you know, we'll all be doing that too. But I think the psychic stuff helps where, you know, if you need to get closure or anything like that, then it helps. Because people need that.
So what do you think goes on after a spirit has passed on? You know, are they still living in another dimension? What is your view from interacting with them? You have a completely different view than somebody that doesn't know anything about this.
Sure. I think through string theory, they were talking about that they think they can pretty well prove there's, you know, scientifically they're close to proving, at least they can prove seven dimensions. And if you think of the dimensions as being like slices of bread, you know, you've got 7 or 12 layers, you know, past you, and you're mixing through that energy all the time. But when someone dies, they get, you know, into the older energy eventually. And it's like tree rings, you know, there's just tons and tons of dimensional energy, and then the further away it gets, that energy kind of breaks down and turns into like oil and seeps down and becomes, you know, something else, you know. But they function on a different dimensional level. But we can try to see about, like, your brother. Did you say it was your brother or brother-in-law?
No, my brother.
Your brother. Okay. I'll see. Of course, you know, doing it on phone is special. but what I'll do is see, do you want to see about him?
Sure.
If he can communicate. I will tell you what I see or hear. Let me see. And then some of it, what happens a lot of times is, I will see letters or numbers or things that will lead me into the information. So let me see. I'm seeing a G. What is a G? I don't know who exactly that goes to. I see a G and a D. So let's see. Say your brother's first name.
Shane.
What?
Shane.
I can't hear you.
Shane.
Spell it for me.
S-H-A-N-E.
Okay. Let me see. I'll listen and see if I hear any connection. Because what the... the G is the person who is basically your guide, who is like your operator. And that can be, you know, grandfather energy. It can be G as in the name.
It could be my father.
Yes. I see one person. The first person has glasses. They're moving. They're like your talker, your operator. I'm feeling like fluid or something on the chest. I'm hearing okay transition. So he made an okay transition. He's not ready to really speak to people yet. So he had to be taken to like a respite kind of energy where he had to transition because it was like confusion. So I'm feeling something about the chest and about the fluid or something. What did he die from?
My brother was an acute overdose, accidental.
Acute. Okay, accidental.
My
father, who also sounds the way you were talking, who also starts with a G, had chronic COPD.
And that would be the fluid on the...
Fluid.
Yeah,
and
the father is okay. The brother, the overdose would be why your brother is kind of confused. But he didn't suffer, he says. He doesn't remember how he got there. And so, but he's okay. He has someone else that has like a W to their name that's assisting him, talking him through it so that when he... when he basically gets ready to transition, he'll just go ahead and go on. They're trying to get him to go on, but he has to kind of like sober up, you know, a little bit, a little confusion. But your dad says something about you need to have your car worked on. What's wrong with your car?
I literally just trained a few days ago. It was ready to go kaput.
Yeah, he's saying, he says, letting it go dry or anything like that. He's like, he's doing something. He's saying, you're driving him crazy with the car. So he's saying, the car is, needs help. So do you need to get a new car or you got this one going for a little bit more?
Oh, we just traded it.
We just barely traded our my car.
Okay. Well, then
new
good.
One. But Ben also has a 1964 T-Bird that he's been letting sit in the garage for quite some time.
Yeah.
Maybe yelling at him for that.
Well, he's saying one of them was a lemon. So he didn't care for it. It wasn't his brand of car
that
he liked. What kind of car did he like? Was it a Chevy or a Buick?
Oh no, he was a big truck kind of guy.
Like a Ford.
He was a tractor trailer truck driver. He had a big Bronco for many years.
So he thought that was kind of a sissy car.
He thought it was a sissy car.
So he didn't
like
the car anyway. So he's glad you're moving on up. but he's fine, and he's conscious. He's apparently made whatever transition. But he is your guide. So when you want things that you feel like you need to talk to your father about, you can talk to him about to help you get things figured out in your life or help. He can help you and assist you get those. If he can help, he'll help you. That's what they're there for. But your brother is okay. He's just still kind of moving slow. He was always a late bloomer. So.
Yes.
But he's okay. He's okay.
Now, do you have any inclination to think that he's with his son at all?
Of his son? Let me see.
His son that passed away?
All right. He is... Hold on a second. He is still another one that is in respite. That, you know, and that he really was not prepared to go yet. He's still kind of hanging out around home, where his home was. They're trying to get him to go on, and he's not quite ready yet. Because he just was not prepared. He's like the father. He's a little confused about why, what, and where. So he's hanging. He's kind of like with his brother, but they're both kind of like, you know, it's kind of like being in a nursing home. You know, they're just being nursed until they get aware enough to move on. But he'll be okay. He's just not transitioned yet. Either one of them. So, but they're okay. But you'll probably, if wherever he lived, if you go there, you'll know. Because he's doing something. He's watching something. He likes to watch color and movement.
Would you say color and movement?
Yes.
Yes, he was deaf.
Yes. So he liked color and movement, and he's watching color and movement. So he likes to hang out, and he's still hanging out. He's hanging out with people who are a little bit younger than him, I think. So, but he's okay. But you'll notice when he's around. But he's still a little bit dazed, like your brother.
Right.
Like father, like son.
Yes, unfortunately, both of them were just so unexpected.
Yes.
Yeah, I bet they were confused.
Yeah. Who is the W that I'm seeing?
Probably my grandfather, William.
Okay. That is the person who's trying to talk your brother into going on.
And my brother was also buried right next to him.
Yes. And so he's keeping track with him and keeping company with him and trying to get him to move on. And he just hasn't yet. And
right.
When he does, then the son will, you know. But until he does, then the son is just kind of hanging out, chilling.
Right.
Watching things, you know, watching color movement, watching anyone that's working on the Internet or anything. So he's got his own little world. But your dad's fine. He just, and it's good that you got your car changed. So, you know.
No, she was begging me for it. I had to do it.
Yeah.
I wasn't going to make it down the road.
It was at the end of its life.
It was.
Yeah. Sometimes it's time to change.
Unfortunately, there's no spirits in cars. Although I think that one had a little bit in it.
Yeah. Well, apparently that shows he's watching what you're doing. So, you know, he didn't like whatever that car was. So he thought it was a lemon, in his opinion. He said a lemon on wheels. So,
he wasn't a fan of the mom van.
Huh?
He wasn't a fan of the mom van.
Yeah. Yeah. So, see, that's how kind of like the spiritual psychic stuff works. Of course, you know, doing it over the phone is special. But, you connect into them. Yeah. But it's still, since it's energy, you can do it from a distance.
Anywhere.
You know, so, I mean, so, but you can see how it kind of works.
Right.
You tell me who my gremlin is. That's what I learned.
Stop calling it a gremlin.
Oh, my God.
I call it a gremlin because I work on a ship. All right?
Oh, okay.
So I call it my gremlin.
He's a merchant marine.
So when anything's going to about to go wrong, I will be woken up in time to go out to the engine room and find something going wrong every time.
Without fail.
And I know there's something with me. And it's like, wake up, and I'll sit there in bed, and then it's like a kick in the pants. Get up and go look. Something's going wrong. And I'll walk out there, and something's going wrong. So I always call it my gremlin. I think it just likes me to work. That's what I call it.
Oh, okay. You've got a gremlin. Well, your gremlin has a D to his name. So, also, so there's a lot of D's in y'all's lot. But it's a, your gremlin is a guy, is a friend.
D or G? Did you say D or G? D?
D.
I'm trying to think.
He's a guy, he's a real sharp-looking guy, a little shorter than you, he's saying. But it would be D, like in Douglas or something like that, you know. So but he's somebody. I think he's a friend. He's an acquaintance. He's not your family members. He's somebody that you know.
Huh.
And I think he may have passed through car wreck or something like that. He died through something like a car wreck or a wreck of some sort.
Wow. Well, I do have one friend, but it's not a D. It's a C.
What is a C? Well, what it
Chris.
Is, he got brown hair.
Dirty blonde Chris. The only one I can think of who died in a car wreck.
Chris Josh.
Well,
yeah, he died
okay,
in a car wreck.
Okay, what's his haircut? He died in a car wreck. He looks good. He says he looks good now.
Could be. That's the only one I can think of. It was... I just reconnected
with him. How long has he been dead? You just reconnected with him when he died.
Since 1997.
Well?
Yeah.
He died
so
in 1997.
So he's... 99? Okay.
97.
Well, he's still hanging out with you a little bit ever so often. So when you feel like you've got your gremlin, it's him.
Right, because, I mean, that is... Yeah, I literally had just reconnected. What happened was he had really screwed up his life for a short time, and we grew apart.
Yeah.
And then he straightened out his life, and we came back together. And then shortly thereafter, there was a traumatic event. He was
racing home
to take care of something that had come up, and that was, you know, it was a very bad. They crashed their car, and he ended up going through the windshield, and he actually passed on.
Yeah, he said they weren't able to show him. Correct.
They weren't able to what?
They weren't able to show him. Correct.
No, I don't believe they were. I don't remember. I wasn't actually able to make it to see him because I was working on
the
ship at the time.
Because he's saying he has a pretty face now.
Yeah. Well, he went through a windshield, and I know that. They probably could have maybe saved him if they had found him, but they couldn't find him in time. That's how far he was dislodged.
Yeah. Well, since you were heavy on his mind because y'all just reconnected, so he thinks of you, you know, that so you're the one he kind of hangs out with.
Yeah, he was...
He said you need to get more colorful, though. He says, you know, gray is the color.
we were inseparable as friends.
I have pictures of
well,
that.
Well, you're inseparable. Yeah, well, you're still inseparable as friends. You just don't realize that.
I don't think there was, geez, I think since I was 5 years, 4 or 5 years old, I was hanging out with him all the way up until.
Wow. What? You know, but he's happy, and he seems to like hanging out with you, except he just thinks you need to get a little bit more color, a little bit more. He says you're a little stale, you need to get exciting. So, you know.
He was always the favorite one. That wasn't me.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah.
And the color of the
now,
like browns and greens.
Yeah, but he's a good warning system. He'll let you know when things happen. So, you know, but that's him. And if when something happens and you feel him around you, you can talk to him and tell him, you know, let him know that you know he's there. Because he's not hurting anything. He's just around you. He just feels comfortable around you.
No, I always call it my gremlin because it just happens to be at the wrong time. I said, I swear he just wants me to work. It's just making things so I can watch me work.
Well, he watches. You know, he just wishes you were a little bit more exciting. He says, Lon, you get boring when you get older.
Yeah,
you've
like
grown up and now you're boring.
Not boring.
Friends.
He thinks you are. He thinks you are. He thinks, like, God, you know, do something. Do something else. You know, so that's who your person is.
Interesting. I like that.
And, but he's around a lot, so, you know. So, but he's not a bad guy. See, that's where, you know, when you were asking how can you tell someone's good or bad, I can tell he's good. So, he's good. You're fine. So, but he tries to get your attention a lot, so.
Oh, lots of possibilities.
Lots of possibilities.
Well, I don't know. I was just thinking, I'm trying to remember. I don't remember how he went.
Well, that's something for you to ponder
on. Yeah, I'll ponder. Sorry, you got me
in
now.
And see, that's part of the process, too. You know, I'll tell people stuff, and then they have to go look it up or think about it because, you know, sometimes you don't know. You know, what happens,
well, I mean,
and then that also gets confirmation, you know, later.
I also find that anybody who has visions, I mean, it's always a question. It's never an answer. It's like you have to sit there and you have to figure exactly out what it's saying because it's not taken at face value.
Yeah. Yeah.
Only my opinion on how it all goes. I mean, just because it's the way somebody sees it, and then you have to bring it back in and realize how it fits together. It's how that puzzle piece fits into the rest of the puzzle is how it goes.
Yeah.
How you read it.
Yeah. And see, when I'm looking at it for you and I see bits and pieces, of course, I don't know who these people are. So, you know, and sometimes people have to go and ask their mom or say, who the heck was this? Or, you know, but you know, But it's good, you know. So, because it makes you become aware that you're not alone. You always have someone looking at you, after you, around you, and you're never really alone, even if you want to be.
That's true.
That's always been one of my favorite sayings ever since I really got into the paranormal. It's like, you know, even when you're at your most depressed moment and you're feeling all alone, you're never actually alone because you're usually in a room full of dead people.
they're tattling on you all the damn time. And, you know, it's like for me, when I have to try to go to bed, you know, I tell people, you know, all right, go do something else, go watch TV, leave me alone for a while, you know.
Right.
So, you know, because...
Now, can you walk up to somebody and...
Around.
Do you know when someone else has a gift like yours?
Yeah, when I go up and see people and see something happen and tell them. I try not to do that to people unless I know that they're open to it because some people really freak out, you know. So you have to be careful how you tell people, you know, oh, there's a dead person following you. You know, they're happy. So, you know, that doesn't go over very well sometimes. So you have to make sure you know, if it's meant for me to tell them, I think it happens to where I tell them. If not,
right.
Then I hold back and, you know, because not everyone necessarily needs to know what's going on around. And some people don't want to know what's going on around them. So, but you know, but it, But if you have someone around you who's trying to get your attention to talk to you, and then they can't, and then finally somebody comes around that can, you know, they try to talk to you whether you're ready or not.
Right.
So, you know, because they want to get through and say, you know, so it's a complicated little situation there. And I hope I didn't, with either one of you, I didn't bother you me doing that. I mean, I was popping it out on y'all about your people.
No, it's very comforting, and I more than you know. What is your view on attachments? I hear a lot of people in the paranormal community praying about it.
It is one of the worst terms to come around for a while, because I have had so many people go, I have an attachment! And so, you know, you have to look at this situation and see if it's really an attachment or if it's not, or, you know, and really to me what an attachment means, you know, and it may be just the way that I look at it. But I think everyone has, you know, experiences with spirits and stuff like that, but very few people get things that are just stuck on them or that's trying to get in their energy or trying to harass them. Now, there was a case where a girl I knew came in that she was always real pretty, real bubbly, real happy. And she came into the store, and she was fried, and she was shaking. And I could see this dead guy falling behind her that had a leather jacket on. I said, where'd you get your boyfriend? And she says, we were using a Ouija board. And we got scared, and we threw it in the closet, and we didn't close it. And the spirit just followed her around. And so I had to, and that would be what I would call an attachment. It was bothering her. So I made her bring in the Ouija board. I closed it, got rid of it, and got rid of her boyfriend. So it was pretty simple. But a lot of people now are looking at it, and you have to, an attention thing, if they're really having an experience or they're just trying to have attention, you know, so it means different things to different people, but it's a catch term, a catchphrase that I'm not real happy with, because I've had people use it in cases where it was not really an attachment. You know, they just were having stuff going on, if that makes sense.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I know people that have had spirits literally embody them and act through them, almost like a possession, but yet they were still in control of themselves.
Yeah.
And then I've had other people
and
that
you can
are
have
like,
it.
I've had, you know, somebody just lingering over my shoulder and won't leave me alone.
Yeah.
No, not
and that's where if they're bugging you, yeah, if they're feeling that and it's really disturbing them, that's when they need to reset their energy, say, this is my boundary, this is the line, you know, and that way, too, sometimes there's a little trick where if you see yourself basically surrounded in a gold bubble, it for some reason cuts off other energies and they don't like looking at their dead selves in the reflection of the bubble. So they'll leave you alone. And it also gets rid of people who are psychic vampires because they can't feed on you, so then they'll go somewhere else and feed on someone else.
I've never heard someone refer to gold.
Yeah, most people.
Gold? Because you do it and you envision that it's real shiny on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And that a lot of the dead people that are hanging around you that are lower energies or discarnates or anything like that, they usually tend to have more hold on to what they look like when they died. So a lot of them don't like to see the reflection because then they see the true self that they, you know, they see they're dead. They don't like
that.
So it gets rid of a lot of people.
Is that kind of like the same theory as if you are trying to ward off spirits to hang a mirror on the outside of your house kind of a thing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. They don't like to see themselves. They don't mind. They go around and they, because they're thinking like you think. You know, they're conscious. But you know, but if they don't see themselves, then they don't really, they can project whatever it is they think they look like. But if they really see themselves, sometimes it disturbs them, and that, well, they won't, they'll back off because they don't want to see that. That's too real for them. If they're holding on to damages or death, because most spirits do not look like they're dead. They look like, they may look like photographs or they look like people. I've seen them where they were so solid I didn't know they were a ghost until they disappeared. but
I
the ones
I
that are damaged, oh, it's very special. it's very special, but it also has to be in the right place. I've only had it happen twice where I went, I didn't know. You know, I was working in a store, and this really tall, tan, good-looking guy comes in, and I said, can I help you? And he goes, no, you know, I'm just looking. And the store was backed up to a cemetery just happens, because the lady who owned the store, her son is buried in the cemetery. So she had her store backing up to that cemetery. And this guy comes in, he goes down, and there's jewelry cases, and he bent down and was looking. And about 10 minutes later, I didn't see him get up. You know, I thought, well, maybe he needs some help, or maybe he passed out, you know, bend it over. And there was no one there. And, I mean, he was as solid looking as anybody else, and he'd open the door and come in. But then I started realizing the clothes he was wearing was like what I used to wear in the 70s. You know, we would wear Doc Siders and polo shirts and Izod shirt. He had on like an Izod shirt and Doc Siders and these kind of like, you know, khaki shorts and stuff. And he looked like somebody from the 70s. And then I went, oh, you know, it was just somebody from the cemetery coming through and looking at the store. So, you know, I had no idea. He just looked so solid. And usually they don't do that way, so.
Yeah, we have a lot of passerbys through here.
Huh?
We get a lot of passerbys through here where we are. We've actually investigated at our own house.
Yeah, we have a very active house.
At times.
At times. It's seasonal depending on when the restaurant was open.
Okay, I'm having a little trouble hearing you.
So we have a seasonal haunting here. It's it used to be a restaurant, so we get passerbys.
Oh, okay. So it just
we get passerbys all the time. Some good, some bad.
The house I live in around Christmas time, we get a lot of activity. The rest of the time,
we lose.
Dead.
When it gets cold up here, we lose our activity.
Yeah,
because
they.
We did what you said. We've actually maintained boundaries within our house. The restaurant end of the house, we allow whatever to go on, but our end of the house is off limits.
And see, when it gets cold, a lot of spirits absorb thermal heat, so that's why. You know, you'll feel cold around you because they're absorbing your heat so they can manifest. So when it gets really cold, they go into hibernation because they don't like the cold no more than we do. You know, it makes it harder for them to function.
Yeah, but we maintain the boundaries in our house because it is so active during the summer months.
And every so often, do y'all smudge or do anything like that? Or
we do.
Okay.
Good. In fact, I got spare sticks sitting in my drawer right now for in case it does get to the point where it.
We've had a few get through into the house, and you know they like to sneak up on you and.
Oh, we have a few normals that we allow through.
Family,
yeah.
People that belong to the prop and family. But other than that, you can
tell that they're people.
Yeah, the people who belong here, I don't have a problem with this. The people who don't, the passerbys, and
yeah,
We keep them too. But, I mean, the other people, I mean, they were here before
we've had
we
a couple very dark ones come through that we've had to have help from, you know, experienced medium, literally drag them out kicking and screaming.
Yeah.
And, I mean,
yeah.
I know, that's the one time I wish they had a recorder going.
That was when we first moved in. My son was sitting on the bed with me, and we knew that something was in the room. We could see him walking around, and called a friend. We don't, that was involved in the paranormal because that was really the first big instance we were exposed to here, and it was terrifying. This man had picked my hair right up off my head and was twirling it in his hands, and yet, you know, there's nobody standing next to me, but, you know, Ben's like, there's this very black, tall man standing behind you, and so we called a friend of ours and helped us out, and he, I guess, after projected him. And my son, to this day, he was 5 at the time, can tell you the tale of this man kicking and screaming his way down the stairs, stomping the stairs, and unbolted our cellar door and slammed it so hard that it bounced and stamped down the stairs out of the house.
Yeah. Cool.
So,
at least you know he's gone. At least you know he's gone.
Needless to say, we went out and bought recorders and everything shortly thereafter.
But it's not a good idea to put recorders in any room that you really, if you hear something that scares you, that, you know, don't be doing that in your bedroom and stuff, because I've had people who've done that and then they're scared to stay in the house because they heard things on the recorders.
No.
Yeah, but I'm not afraid of it.
Oh, good.
And some people too, because I'd like to know what's there, and if it's there and it's fine and friendly, then okay, whatever. But if it's not, then it needs to move on.
Oh yeah, yeah. And that's
and
smart.
I'm more than
that's the way you have to do it.
Yeah,
you know,
and I'm more than
a lot of spirits are. There are just a lot of spirits that are like bums. They just go anywhere that the door opens.
Right. Like I said, we keep half of our house open and the other half of our house closed. We have a very large house, and we're not in the house. So whatever goes on down below, we don't care.
You don't care.
Yeah, we do. They want to recreate their bar scenes over and over again, you know, play the pool table, go right ahead. But, you know, we have our boundaries, so.
Yeah, good, good. And that's the way people need to function. Because if you're dealing with spirits and stuff, that's what makes the difference, you know, you set your boundaries and you make them follow it. Just like children, you know.
Right.
And,
but at the same time,
and,
they exist. I look at it as the fact is they exist just as much as we do.
Sure.
And they need to be just as much as we do. And to me, I can share as long as they're willing to play within the rules. They're not going to keep me up at night. They're not going to bother people in my house. And it's all good.
Well, and see, I live in a 114-year-old house. And I live on one side, and a friend of mine lives on the other side. And right now, she's in a nursing facility recovering from some problems. And she has a spirit that lives on her side that when she's not here, it calls her name. And her name is Judith. So at 3 o'clock in the morning, without fail, you can hear it knocking on the door, because it won't come over here. I refuse to have it over here. And you'll hear it go, Judith. And I'm like, knock it off. I'm trying to sleep. You know?
All right,
and
Mark, we're at the end of our hour. I want to thank you so much for being on. It has been an absolute pleasure talking with you and getting so much information from you, and I hope that we can talk again in the future. I would really love to get
Thank y'all for inviting me, and it's been fun. I'm sorry I can't hardly hear. I'm also not the fat psychic. I got my deaf psychic now.
All right. Have a good night.
And stay in touch.
You too, and thank y'all so much.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye-bye.